We haven't caught up with our main man, Dave Poulin, in a while.
He's a busy man. He does the Leafs. He does color for the Habs.
Right. Poulin is one of the harder working men in show business.
Swiss Army knife. Does
it all. The Swiss Army knife of TSN.
Mm-hmm. Does it all.
Does it all. Here's our buddy, Dave Poulin. How's it going, Poulin?
Going great, thank you. Going great.
Were you at the Grammys last night or what?
No, I missed that. But I've been pretty much everywhere else, I think, or it feels like that sometimes.
Okay. How you holding up?
Really good. Really good. It's been a fun year. You know, you were watching fun hockey, and just last week I was in Montreal for both Tuesday and Thursday. And Thursday they played as well against the Jets as I've seen them in 2 years. And there was so much build-up to Saturday night's game. And, you know, I got buddies that are Montreal fans and buddies that are Leaf fans. And it was just – and it was fun to watch both teams going in on a roll and both teams playing well. I thought it was a fun game, a fast game and a fun game.
Outstanding game. Like, exceeded expectations,
and
which is difficult because the hype train
was usually
going.
One team's garbage or one team's way out of it. One's a mess. They were both relevant.
I think what it did is it actually legitimized all the chatter about these two teams maybe meeting in the playoffs. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was like we got to visualize that, and it's like, oh, yeah, they are both really good teams. Like, that could happen.
I can't even imagine that, Brian, from a rivalry standpoint. And probably, like, I had some good rivalries in Philly, but the intense rivalry for me was Boston and Montreal because there were so many layers of dislike and layers of hatred. Like, your grandfather hated a certain Montreal team if you were in Boston, but your dad really hated somebody else, and you really hated somebody else. There was so much history to go with. And you imagine a Leaf-Montreal series and how many different layers of neighbors. Start thinking of the neighbors around you and all the different fans and the different business acquaintances. It would really be fun. And particularly, I mean, Where do you draw the line right now between these two teams? Overtime on Saturday night, I think, is pretty indicative.
Yeah, we were discussing that earlier. Like, I think playing the role of a bookie in Vegas, home ice would factor in. But if the Leafs had home ice, I think they would be a favorite. I think if the Habs had home ice, somehow it may be close to a pick 'em. But if you asked me that question 4 months ago, I would have said not. You know, it would be the Leafs won the division and the Habs backdoored into a wild card spot. But you know, a lot of things change, and you got to give credit to Montreal and Marc Bergevin. They made changes to their roster. They got healthy. Shea Weber, he looks like the same old Shea Weber. You know, mm-hmm. You wouldn't know that the guy missed a calendar year.
And yeah, there was this sequence, Brian, against Florida and maybe 2 weeks ago, and the big Barkov kid had the puck, and he was skating. He was shorthanded, and he was skating through the neutral zone. He dumped it in, and he turned to go back to the bench. First period, like innocent play, right? And Weber stood up and punched him as hard as he could in the chest. And it was right down below us. And the kid was, like, stunned. He looked at him like, what is that? And you could just see Weber just kind of a little, you know, just going about his business saying, hey, look, kid, don't come down my side. Like, I'm not interested in you coming down the side anymore. And the kid didn't the rest of the night. And the impact he's had on that group of players is really substantial. But like any locker room, you know, you usually have guys at either end, but it's where those 12 guys in the middle are going. And with the change in the locker room in Montreal from last year to this year, really you give credit to that group in the middle because they essentially got a clean slate. You know, they might have swayed from side to side from time to time, but they got a clean slate that said, wow, if this team really changes now, then I'm looked at as I was never, ever part of the issue. And that's what that group did.
Right. With Dave Poulin, our TSN hockey analyst, we've talked a lot about the Maple Leaf power play. And, you know, you're usually on the other side of it trying to kill penalties throughout your career, but they are, it's anemic right now. I mean, they can't get anything going. They showed life last night, but they didn't execute. Is that enough to maybe trigger something, or are they still looking at the stat sheet and saying, we can't score, so I don't care how good I felt at the time. Unless it goes in the net, who cares?
No, I think that does trigger something. And the one thing that you think about from a tweaking standpoint is putting O's right shot right in the middle, the way it sets up. Because if it goes from Marner down to Tavares was attacking a lot from below the goal line. And if he had a right shot to go to in that slot, oh, can you imagine sitting in the slot in the middle of that power play with Marner looking at you and Tavares below the goal line if you were a right shot?
Yeah, I mean, we're going to look at it tomorrow night in the pregame, but that's kind of the area that I looked at. They're just, you put guys like John Tavares and Matthews and Marner attacking from down low there. I know Morgan Riley's got a good shot, but if they can just keep all those elements, so they got the shot from the point, the down-low play, the seam play to Marner, because the Marner holding on to the puck and taking the half-slapper, that seems to be, everybody knows that's coming. Like, you've got to switch it up a little bit. So just, but if you move it around, there's a shot element from the point, there's a down-low play, then that can become available again. But if that's all it is time after time, it just dries up and there's nothing there.
Yeah, exactly. You know, we had Brian Boucher on. He did the game for NBC last night. I think it's interesting. We're in the market all the time. We watch this team over and over again, and we kind of get jaded sometimes. And I said, what were your thoughts on the power play? He laughed. He goes, I looked at the numbers before the game, and then I watched them during the game, and they did everything but score. They had 23 shots on the power play. He said, so I thought, geez, they just had a bad night. They're a terrific power play. So it's interesting when you get an outside look, you know, of a good hockey guy who would have been a net defending that power play, thinking it was a nightmare.
Pooley out in Anaheim. I know your buddy got canned there the other day. How awkward of a situation is that? The GM, I guess, was told by the owner, maybe you're not bringing anybody else in. You're now taking over as the coach. How awkward or how uncomfortable is that dynamic in Anaheim?
Yeah, I had a chance to catch up with Dave Nonis in Montreal on Tuesday night after we watched them on Monday night and did the game there. And it kind of looked like that. They clearly didn't want to bring Dallas Aikens up for a couple of reasons. One, they have a group of about six or eight kids down in San Diego that they think are going to play in the NHL next year. It's a really good young group. And, in fact, a couple of defensemen, the Mahura kid and Jakob Larsson, the first rounder from a couple of years back, they sent back to the minors pointedly. And so they've got a good environment down there. They're winning down there. So they didn't want to bring Dallas Aikens up now. They didn't want to separate him from that group. But, guys, I worked for Bob Murray. I can't imagine Bob Murray going behind the bench right now. Like, he hasn't had skates on. He, like, think about that. Think about putting skates on and sweats right now and planning practice. But first of all, you've never done it. You've never done it. I think he may have coached his son's midget team at some point. But he's never coached in the NHL.
Wow.
He's never coached at any level. And so you're putting, I'm just laughing, think of a guy bending down and putting his skates on again. Like, thinking,
how sore would your feet be?
This like, just isn't very much fun.
No. Maybe it's the ultimate tank. You know, maybe it's like, let's really go down with the ship here.
I think it's more like, I got to know Murph pretty well and working for him. And he's a fiery, fiery guy and a fiery personality. And those players think they had it tough with Randy. Wake up, gentlemen, because the boss is coming in now, and he's going to decide your future. And I'm really intrigued to watch them play now to see what happens, because I can only imagine a bad first period and Murph coming in after the first period in that locker room. Like, you'd be looking to hide, guys. You would be like, this is your worst nightmare coming in here right now.
That's what we were talking about in the previous hour with Ray is, you know, guys may view it as a clean slate, but this is somebody who's not new to the organization. He signed them all to contracts. So, you know, I don't think there's going to be an element of guys being phonies, but he's going to see firsthand what the hell's going on as far as attitude and maybe who's the problem. And quite honestly, you know, Pooley, we were talking about it, like, some of the guys have some contracts that are prohibitive. That's really, when you do have some young players coming up, but you know, you've got guys like Kessler and Perry that are on long-term deals that have a lot of mileage on them. You know, maybe that he can get them going, but ultimately, you know, you're going to have to rely on your big guns to try and dig you out, and it's been a battle there.
Yeah, I think those guys are hard to move, Jamie, but I think that next tier of guys, they've got 27-year-olds, maybe three of them that would be very, very attractive to move. And when we were doing the Montreal game, they kept flashing to Cam Fowler, and the RDS did, and you know, from a feed standpoint. And Bergie had allegedly been in Winnipeg with them and then been in Toronto with them. And so it was who he was following. And they were like, well, why would they move Cam Fowler? And then I started to think about it, and I thought, well, maybe he is that 27-year-old, and he's caught in between. They can't move the 33-year-olds, and they don't want to move the 20-year-olds. But if you really want to change the makeup of the team, he'd be a valuable asset to move. He's signed to a long-term deal, but he's only 27 years old.
Yeah.
And he's a really good player. And, you know, of course, then I started thinking about Montreal. Montreal has cap space, and you know, they've got some young prospects that you know, could be a fit back the other way who aren't in Montreal uniforms yet if Anaheim are going young. So I think that team, part of Bob Murray going into the locker room now is I think he's going to be an active guy at the trade deadline. And I worked through a trade with him, and he handles things very interestingly. You know, I worked literally right through, you know, a suite in a Chicago hotel with big letterboard all over the walls with potential trades. The last time this team was really shaken up, and he has no qualms about making major deals.
Do you think it's kind of game over in Edmonton, Pooley, after Hitch's latest comments where he claimed the coaches care more than the players? I know the ripple effect with that one is they must just have had enough of it out there.
Well, another organization that's going to be really intriguing to watch, because the layers up top there are more than you even think about. Like, if you think about, right, you know, from Bob Nicholson at the top of it, and then, you know, Gretz has a factor in there, and then you've got three former GMs. You have Craig McTavish, you have Kevin Lowe, and you have Scott Housen, who's a senior VP in some capacity. And then Bob Green, and then Dwayne Sutter, and now Keith Gretzky is an assistant GM. Interim GM, rather. There's a lot of layers there. And, you know, I would imagine how hard it would be to make a decision right now there. And someone's going to grab it, and someone's going to say, here's what we're doing. And we're all going to be watching to see what the shakeout or fall down and fallout from that is, because that hockey team, it's not a very good hockey team. It's just not. But the intrigue of having the best player in the world there, you know, who's very, very young with a long runway ahead of him. And, you know, so if I'm trying to draw an analogy, look at Mario's first 5 or 6 years in Pittsburgh, and they're eerily like Connor McDavid's first 4 years in Edmonton. And he doesn't make the playoffs. Then he actually made the playoffs once. Then he didn't make the playoffs again. In his first 6 years, if I'm correct, he made the playoffs once. There you had, you know, one of the best players in the world. He made the playoffs once. And that's when they made their major, major changes in the organization. That was in some form, and I'm not sure the exact time, but Bob Johnson coming in, Scotty Bowman coming in. You know, the major changes were made that led to those two cups. And Edmonton couldn't be getting pretty close to that exact same time frame with Connor McDavid in his fourth year right now that says, you know, this is time to get things straightened out now.
Pooley, that's what we were talking about. If you're a young and up-and-coming general manager, is there a guy out there that would maybe go, no, not for me? And I kind of argued maybe, and not even young, but like a Kelly McCrimmon. Like, what would be his framework to go in and take that job? Would he have to say to the owner, like, just write checks, I need kind of carte blanche, I need, like, full autonomy? Like, how would that dynamic even work?
That is exactly what has to happen, I think. But yeah, that's a lot of different names I just threw out there.
Right.
But that's what it would have to be. If it's going to be a guy that takes it, and I think Kelly McCrimmon is an interesting name, and, you know, he's certainly been behind the scenes in Vegas or in front of them, whichever one you want to say, and done a great job there. But that job would appeal to a lot of people just because of number 97 and because of the chance to really do something special there. But you'd have to have the ability to make whatever moves you deem necessary. And, you know, we've seen things turn around pretty quickly, but, you know, the other teams aren't starting with number 97. Starting with that would be pretty darn good.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, we'll see. I mean, there's a lot of moving parts in the NHL these days. Generally, you're in one of the rings.
The good news, Brian, is there are a few different teams in this same situation. Shouldn't that involve some change at some capacity? Shouldn't you be able to find a trade partner right now if you really wanted one?
I would think.
Yeah.
Still got a couple of weeks until the deadline, too. I mean, what's stopping you?
Let's hold on right until the deadline so we all can stay busy that day.
Oh, we're going to have a great day that day. And then Owen and I are going to jump over and do the Leaf game that night. No. We'll be all fired up.
Honestly, nice.
Oh, yeah, you guys got the Leaf game that night.
You guys have a panel that night at 7 o'clock.
We do.
Yeah.
We do. We're going to be fresh on the news scene.
You just ruined O-Dog's night.
How
did
you ever?
That is breaking news.
To prep for it. He'll be all fired up.
No,
get that in the Sports Center update.
Michael Farber features or something.
Farber feature in the second period.
Instead of the quiz, it's Michael Farber. Yeah,
just telling stories.
Good man.
That's great.
All right, Pooley. Thanks, buddy.
Okay, guys. Have a great night. Thanks.
Dave Pullen, our TSN hockey analyst.